You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey Jets fans, want $50 off your next round of drinks? Try Tap RM. They deliver the drinks right to your door so you can skip the lines and trips to the liquor store. Discover new and exclusive drinks or shop for your favorites. Don't worry, they've got all the options for you. Order your first round at taprm.com and get $50 off your first order using promo code JETS50. $50 off $100 of beer, not a bad deal. I would highly recommend it. I've done it. Connor's done it. Joe's gotten it. So make sure you go to taprm.com, use promo code JETS50, skip the lines, and get $50 off your first $100 worth of beer. $100 in beer for $50, can't beat that. Now let's get into the pod.
Setting up, looking downfield, he's going to heave a bomb for Corey Davis at the goal line, into the end zone, he's got it! That's a Jet touchdown!
Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPaw11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'll be joined by John Jastrzemski in a moment. New York podcast on the Ringer Network, formerly WFAN. He'll be an awesome guest, so stay tuned for that. Just want to hit a few things after the Jets 24-17 loss to the Miami Dolphins yesterday. Obviously, Jets moved to 2-8, or, disappointing loss, much better, obviously, than the previous 2 weeks in pretty big blowouts. But, nonetheless, an exciting game from a few fronts, in the Bryce Hall and the Elijah Moore front, and Quinn Williams, Sean Franklin Myers, guys like that really impressed. Quincy Williams as well actually played really well. Ashton Davis, I thought, actually played really well on film. Obviously, the negative, you take a loss. I mean, the game where it feels like the Jets kind of lost the game more than the Dolphins won it. At this point in the season, you want to see the Jets stack together some wins. I thought this was a favorable matchup. I picked the Jets to win 27-20. Obviously they did not, do so, but, Jets get over a 290 yard passer again, fourth quarterback this year to do so. The defense held its own they kind of died a bunch of slow cuts at the end of the game, that 4 minute drive, 4 minute offense for the Dolphins that ended up, because of the Jets woes and the kicking game. Ended up basically milking the clock down, about 7 or 8 minutes there, and basically ended the game with that field goal. But, two big penalties, Jason Pinnock and then John Franklin Myers as well, the sack of the Quinn Williams sack at the end of the game there, that you think, oh, wow, they knocked him out of field goal range. Jets have a chance to come back here. And then you get the holding penalty on Pinnock. John Franklin Myers just, as great as he played yesterday, I thought that was just a really tough penalty. And it looked like frustration, as much as Robert Saleh said so, just wanting to get to the quarterback so badly. That obviously hurt. Overall, I thought much more competitive performance. Saleh looked fired up on the sidelines a couple of different times. And, I'll start with the positive, then go right to the negative, and we'll get John in here. Positive, Elijah Moore was fantastic. We finally saw the coming out party from him. Michael Carter was awesome again. It's a real disappointment. He's going to be out 2 to 3 weeks now. Michael Lee, probably more that 3 to 4 week range. Ankle sprains are tough, especially at that running back position. So I'd keep an eye on that. I say he'll probably be out, like I said, 3 to 4 weeks. Elijah Moore now is, over this last 4 or 5 game stretch, he's on pace to be a 1,000-yard receiver for the Jets. As a rookie, it's first time since 2015 with Marshall and Decker, but before that, since 2006 and 2007 with Laviavius Coles and Jericho Cotchery. I mean, that's pretty special. He is their wide receiver one. Again, Carter was awesome. I think he would have gone over, the Jets probably win, and he would have gone over 100 yards if he's playing. Just his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, his ability to make guys miss. The Jets were moving the ball pretty well in the run game overall yesterday. I thought Flacco was fine. That turnover was a killer. That's not on him, obviously. He got destroyed. But that's a killer. And then the intentional grounding, which is on him, was brutal. Knocks them back at a field goal range. It's something that can't happen. A couple other positives. Bryce Hall, I thought, was fantastic again yesterday. Really impressed with, how he's come along in year two, that second year back from the ankle injury. Really impressed again. Michael Carter II, I thought, was okay yesterday. I think he is continuing to show strides. Mike Gesicki is a difficult matchup for anybody in the pass game. Drew a couple offensive pass interferences and things of that nature. You go to Quincy Williams, 15 tackles yesterday, was all over the place and blowing guys up. There's certain games where he looks really out of place, and there's other games where the guy is one physical football player. Quinton Williams, his brother, and more importantly, when the Jets cornerstone guys, the build around looked really good. He continues a really good season. There's a couple times where I was like, wow, this guy's going to have a 2 or 3 sack game. Obviously did not, but, had a sack that gets called back. He almost forces a safety in the end zone. Those are some of the really big positives, I thought. Another couple positives, Zach should be back this week. The Jets will kind of announce that Wednesday morning. That said, it looks all things kind of pointing towards Zach Wilson making his return. Bryce Huff will be back, as I kind of reported earlier. That's a huge, huge get for the Jets. Kyle Phillips made a couple plays, probably the best run defender the other day. You get, Huff, Phillips, and John Franklin Myers kind of all going at the same time. And along with Rankins, Foley, and Q, I think that's a pretty good rotation there for the Jets defensive line that's, needing to continue to play well. And they should have a good opportunity on Sunday, as well as the upcoming weeks. On the negative side, and another positive, LDT, I thought I had a pretty solid debut. I thought he was a pretty major upgrade over Greg Van Rotten. And I think I'm excited to kind of see how that goes. It's a, potential, good move by Joe Douglas. We'll see. It's obviously super low risk. Daniel Brown's already been cut by the Chiefs. So, the Jets basically took on $1.5 million of salary to get him over here. Negative front, I thought Corey Davis had a really quiet day against the team in man coverage, which is super concerning. That's another, another divisional opponent that kind of just played man on him, locked in. Look, the Dolphins have great corners. Elijah Moore is a great matchup, for the Jets, on these corners. But Corey Davis was not. He struggled pretty much since coming back. He obviously had some kind of bloated numbers last week, but had a killer fumble. So he's pretty cemented as the Jets 2 now. I think Elijah Moore is pretty cemented as the 1. You can even argue Crowder is the 2. And Corey Davis is the 3. But again, negative front. Unfortunately, Michael Carter getting hurt is tough. The penalties are tough. The kicking game is the biggest frustration for me. And I will put this a little bit on Salah that early in the game, go for it down in the goal line. They convert 7-7. It's huge confidence to show on your team. Didn't settle for the 3. And then multiple times settling for 3 points, the 4th and 5, you kick a 55-yarder. It's a momentum killer. Obviously, everyone kind of in the stadium knew Amendola wasn't making that field goal. He's been pretty horrendous, to be honest with you, all year. And not anything above, 35, 40 yards. And then this is a 40-yarder after that. The Jets have to take a delay game because they don't trust Amendola later. That's a cost them about 9 points. They lose by 7. Again, obviously, the turnover down in the red zone, can't have that happen. I think the Jets got in the red zone, I believe, 5 or 6 times. Maybe it was 7. I have to check on that. And they scored 17 total points. That cannot happen. That's the difference in the ballgame. The Jets being going in 3-7, into next week against the Houston team, and the Jets kind of can be able to stack wins together. Did not do so. A couple of the other negatives. I just thought some of the holding penalties, there's the self-inflicted wounds. Again, the Jets just cannot get off the field at times on third downs where they need one stop. And that's super frustrating. Again, the kicking game was just a killer. They had a huge penalty. The Dolphins squib it. Ryan Griffin returns it to about the 40, 45-yard line. Massive penalty on the Jets. Now they're back at their own 20 instead of having good field position. Again, that stuff cannot happen. And it seems like the Jets every year, every game get a killer penalty on special teams in the kickoff game, which again, is tough. And I kind of wanted to address this one thing. Again, we'll get John in here in a moment. Rooting for being above the Jets, being caring about the Jets game because Zach Wilson's not playing, or rooting for losses and draft picks at this point in the season, I think is super frustrating. And I think people need to get over themselves in that sense. I don't mean to come off in any way, shape, or form, but you should be wanting to root for wins, man. The Jets are going to have premium draft picks. They're not drafting a quarterback this year, obviously. So, you know, tanking for the number one pick and things of that nature. The Jets aren't tanking. They're rebuilding and they're fully aware of that, but the Jets aren't trying to lose football games. So I think it's perfectly okay to expect them to compete and potentially beat the Dolphins, a 3-7 team in New York, even with Joe Flacco starting. And I think it's okay to root for them to win. You know, you need to change the culture in a lot of different ways. And one of the ways you do that is by winning.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, I can't get over the fact of people thinking that it's good for the Jets to lose. I don't see that. I think for a young team, it's important learning how to win. That stuff translates into 2022 when they're going to be expected to compete. So again, you know, frustrating day from that perspective. The Jets not able to get a victory yesterday. They'll go to a Houston game, you know, where they need to come out with a W. Zach Wilson should be back. Bryce Huff will be back. You know, the Jets have a good opportunity here. The Texans are going to sit in Tua's shell. They're going to make Zach beat them, and he's got to take the throws underneath, do the simple things, and, you know, we'll go from there. I will bring John in now. Again, you know, super, super excited to have him on. We'll talk a little Wilson, a little Jets expectations. Again, continue to subscribe to the channel. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Check out Badlands, obviously, with Connor and Joe, who do a fantastic job. Connor will have his All-22 out soon. And then, obviously, the Turn on the Jets Live and Draft Season Podcast. Thanks for everyone for listening and bring in John right now. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn on the Jets Podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPaul11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, joined by special recurring guest, host of New York on the Ringer, John Descramsey. John, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fine, man. All of a sudden, my football team remembered how to win some games. What a concept, dude. What's happening?
And well, mine did not. Unfortunately, I haven't really won many football games in the last 10 years. But obviously, an interesting game yesterday, kind of as put by Omar Kelly, who I had on last week, magical sloppiness, basically, yesterday. It was just one of those games where you kind of knew it was going to be ugly and see some terrible things. But we did see some positives and negatives. Obviously, you know, Tua had a really nice play. Tua 61 air yards on the throw. So that maybe shut up the haters a little bit and Elijah Moore breaking out.
What a concept when you actually have time to go down the field. I don't know if you noticed this. Adam Orcholetta keeps saying throughout the broadcast, you know, I'd like to see Miami take more shots down the field. Well, in order to take shots down the field, you have to at least have like 2 to 3 seconds within the pocket or rollout to allow that to happen. Otherwise, that's not going to be possible. But yes, I mean, dude, if you watch college football, you know Tua T can throw the ball. Now, I'm not going to say he's going to throw it as beautifully as, let's say, Josh Allen or Justin Herbert. He's not like a big-armed quarterback. That throw to Devontae Smith in the championship game, what was that, like 50, 55 yards down the field? You give him a chance to throw it, he'll get it there.
It's interesting. Yesterday was one of those games where the Jets were competitive for four quarters, but I definitely felt like they're still beating themselves, even when, you know, the kicking game is a disaster and it's tough to watch the stupid penalties. Where do you kind of leave that game? Obviously they've been blown out a couple weeks in a row. Where do you leave that game, you know, from a Jets perspective, you know, coming out of last night?
You know, it's interesting. Obviously they're a bad team and they find ways to lose, whether it's the intentional grounding penalty, not scoring when you have about 3 or 4 possessions in Dolphin territory and you can't have empty possessions like that. The terrible penalty on the third down, like that stuff that can't happen. But here's what I'm going to preach from a positive standpoint. Elijah Moore is a stud. He's going to have a real bright future in the league. I mean, Xavier Howard is one of the best corners in the league, basically said after the game, that dude's got talent. That dude's got some special vibe to him. I'm stoked about that if I'm a Jet fan. I know he's going to miss the next couple of weeks. It's a bummer. Michael Carter can play. I'm watching that game. And Will, I'm saying, why didn't the Dolphins take Michael Carter in the third round? Because he's shifty. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's tailor-made for the modern-day NFL. So we've given Joe Douglas's 2020 draft class a whole lot of heat, a whole lot of smoke. It hasn't really panned out. I think 2021, Moore, Vera Tucker, Carter, that's a nice place to start. Now let's see if you hit on the quarterback.
Yeah, that's where I was going to kind of go with that. Obviously, look, Joe Flacco is now the fourth quarterback this year for the Jets to throw over 290 yards. The Jets are all the way up to ninth in passing offense in the NFL. The last time I had you on, we were talking a lot about like, oh, you know, who are they going to draft? Not who are they going to draft, but like, what are some like realistic expectations? I did not think I'd talk about a Joe Flacco, Josh Johnson, close to 300 yard games. Although Flacco's were a lot of garbage time in the one big play to Moore. But, you know, Zach Wilson looks like he'll be back this week. I thought he should have been back last week, but that's a whole nother discussion that we'll hit on another day. Going against Houston, what are your expectations watching Zach Wilson the next, you know, 7 weeks if he's able to stay healthy? Obviously, it's a pretty big stretch for him, similar to kind of what Tua had last year and other guys, you know, finishing out their rookie year with some favorable matchups. And then he's got some tough matchups, obviously, in the end of the year.
Well, I think it's the idea of mastering the offense. Mike White did in the Cincinnati game. And even for a good chunk of this game against Miami, Joe Flacco did what LaFleur wanted him to do. And I've been saying this for a couple of weeks with Wilson since he's been out with the injury. It's okay to take the 6, the 7, the 8 yard completion, to not put yourself in 3rd and 11 or 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 13, because you're a numbers guy, you're a smart guy. Well, you understand if those numbers are that way on third down consistently, you're not going to convert a lot of third downs. You're going to get off the field. Your offense is going to stall out, and you're going to have no flow, no rhythm, no cohesion to what you're looking to do. We know Zach Wilson has good arm talent. He does. We know he has mobility, but there are times where you have to understand, hey, guess what? I don't need to hit a home run. I have my chances to hit a couple of dingers when I get that fat pitch. It's okay to take the single, the dump off, the safe, you know, 8 yard out. I need to see that. And this is a good get right spot. And this is a good team to go against, I believe, in the Houston Texans to kind of get that going.
It's interesting. Obviously, we're both big Yankee people. And like, it's like, I feel like I have the same conversation with every one of my teams. It's like the Nets, can he not shoot so many threes? Can the Yankees try to get on base for once? Or like, you know, with the Jets, like, can Zach Wilson just take the screen pass? Like, you know, it's an easy 15 yards for you. You shouldn't have to throw a 50 yard bomb every week. You know, in terms of, you know, you mentioned some of the, you know, promising young Jets guys, the defense has been frankly bad. It's almost quite frankly, historically bad. They're last in DVOA. They've played the third easiest offensive schedule, which is like where it's really concerning. But Robert saw this kind of a similar, I guess, track of what happened in San Francisco Salah's first year. They struggled a lot the first half of the year. They started to kind of ground it out. And then next year, obviously, they go to the Super Bowl and everything kind of clicks. What do you make of that struggling defense? Is it lack of talent, coaching? Like, how do you kind of feel and how do you work through that putrid defense, if we're being honest?
I think it's a combination of the two. I like the way they got after it against the Miami Dolphins on the defensive front, but a lot of teams are going to do that. Miami's probably got the worst offensive line in football. So I expected the Jets to have some success there. Look, the secondary is a mess. I mean, you saw it in the Buffalo game. You even saw it with the Mac Hollins play where he's wide open 60, 70 yards down the field. There are way too many lapses like that. And that to me is where coaching's got to kind of tighten up that proposition. That's what they need to straighten out. Yes, the talent is not good enough. I mean, I think we can all figure that out. But you can't keep having those lapses week after week after week after week. And that's where sooner or later something's got to change. Like the idea of Stephon Diggs being one-on-one basically that entire game against Buffalo 2 weeks ago, explain that to me. Like that's the sort of stuff that would have me frustrated with this coaching staff. But let's be honest, Will. You're really not going to know until the end of next year where you really stand with this staff. And the learning curve for quarterbacks, the learning curve for coaches – it's getting tighter and tighter. It's getting shorter and shorter. You don't get in the NFL 4-5 years. That's just, you don't get it unless you have the most patient owner on the planet. So by the time we hit next year, I'm not saying it's a playoff mandate. Listen, I know the Jet fan. I talk to him all the time. They're sick and tired of losing. They're sick and tired of the excuses. But you do have to realize they're building this thing from the ground up. But by this time next year, here's my expectation. You need to be You know those graphics they show all the time, bro?
I was just going to say
this. On NFL Network and CBS and Fox this time of the year in the hunt. The Jets got to be one. I'm not saying they got to be a play. You got to be like playing relevant November and December football where you feel like you're not dead and buried by the time you hit Thanksgiving. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, my goal is next Halloween, the In the Hunt graphic, when it makes its debut on Sunday Night Football.
Well, it's going a little now. Remember with the schedule getting pushed back. So now it's like, mid-November. It used to be Halloween. Now it's like mid-November. Thanksgiving is like the first time we're seeing this, which I know it's going to throw everybody off, but that's okay.
Yeah, but even if the Jets are a 4 or 5 win team at this point next year, you know, they've had some games they could have won this year as well. I kind of wanted to get your take on a little bit of, you know, the rookie QB class quickly as a whole. Everyone's pretty much struggled outside of Mac Jones, who's kind of taken what's been given. And I think there is a bit of unnecessary hype, you know, surrounding that. He's an NFL ready guy. Trevor Lawrence, who is the generational quarterback that once a 10-year guy, has not been great. Justin Fields and Zach Wilson stat lines are not pretty. Trey Lance hasn't played often. So what do you kind of make of this? There's just been the debate of should rookie quarterbacks going forward play it, you know, right away, or this is supposed to be this amazing class, 5 great guys, and it's been like 1.5 decent performances outside of Mac Jones so far.
Well, let's be honest, Will. Think about this for a minute. Trey Lance is not ready to play. He's not ready to play. A lot of people wanted to catapult him into that job for San Francisco. He's got arm talent. He's got physical talent. He's clearly not ready to play and start at this level.
And look at San Fran. They settled down, and now they're 5-5, and they're a team that I don't
And they're going to let Garoppolo play the rest of the year, and they're going to try to make the postseason, and then they'll evaluate come February, March, okay, is Trey Lance ready to be a starter next year? Or did we maybe misevaluate where he is? Wilson, listen, he's on a bad team. He was playing against cupcakes last year at BYU. Remember, they couldn't exactly schedule because of COVID the same way they normally would. I mean, he went through the Sisters of the Poor. That is a major step up in competition. And I had no problem with the Jets running him out there because I do believe that you can learn on the job. But there have been some games where and I wasn't a big believer in this. So I'll admit that I was a little bit off when it comes to this. Would have been nice having that sort of veteran mentor early in the year, basically be like, dude, maybe you shouldn't be doing this. Maybe you shouldn't be doing that. Maybe to have that in addition to the coaching staff would have helped. And listen, Lawrence is going to be fine. The team is terrible. Terrible. Remember, Peyton Manning threw like 7 more interceptions and touchdowns. And was on a 3-win Indianapolis team. And then the following year, they went 11-5 and made the postseason. Now, I'm not proclaiming that's going to happen with Trevor Lawrence. But the idea that, like, people are saying, oh, he's a boss. He's not going to – let's cool the Jets on that, number one. And give Mac Jones credit. Listen, Mac Jones has gone into New England and has done exactly what they've wanted him to do. He could step in right away. They run a ton of play action. They have a skill set that's tailor-made for exactly what he's looking to do. And he doesn't screw it up. They run it well. They play top-notch defense. They're incredibly well coached. I think Mac Jones was the perfect quarterback for New England. I don't think he has star, like, can't-miss talent, but he's in the perfect, perfect place. And good for him. He's making the most of it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree there. Want to add a couple other just, you know, quick things. Obviously, you know, there's press conferences. It's hard to take a lot out of one way or another. The concern in that 2018 draft with Baker was if he comes to the Jets, that New York market is it going to be a mess for him? I know he struggled with a ton of injuries. What did you make of those comments after the fans that are booing and like trashing the fan? I are you as concerned a little bit with the way Baker's kind of doing the Baker cycle where now he's in the, you know, it's kind of complaining and stuff like that? Because I felt like in the year, it's like he's going into a big offseason with this extension and looming. Obviously, Lamar and Josh Allen are going to get theirs. Like, Baker's not guaranteed to get extended, you know, that $40 million deal like everybody else is.
I'm very worried about Baker Mayfield. And I was one of his biggest proponents, and I was one of his biggest fans. I thought he had a ton of swagger. I thought he had a ton of confidence. I thought he came on the scene and had a great rookie year where I was like, okay, I think the Browns are cooking with something here. He has not gotten better. Now, the injuries this year have clearly played a role in his performance. Anybody who's going to say otherwise is kidding themselves. But when you start fighting the Cleveland Brown fan base, when you have your wife basically going on social media and sticking up for you and doing the same sort of stuff, you got to know full well it ain't going to end well. It's not going to be a pretty story if that's the way you think you should handle it. And yeah, well, listen, if I were the Cleveland Browns, I'm not rushing to go and give Baker Mayfield $35 to $40 million a year. And look, I think he's an adequate, fine, solid NFL starting quarterback. Is he a great quarterback? No, he's not. And that's the thing always when it comes to the quarterback discussion. It's one thing when you have one of these guys and you're not paying them, because then you can kind of see, all right, are they going to grow? Are they going to develop? Can we maybe tailor-made our system to what we have around this particular player? Like, you have time when the quarterback's not making any money. Once it comes time for the quarterback to get paid, you got to know, do we have our guy or not? And I'm not sold that Cleveland has their guy, and I'm bummed about that because I love Baker. I really do. I loved him in college, and I always root for my guys in college that I, like, attach myself to become stars. It has not been the case.
Yeah, it's just a weird one. I wanted to hit on one other thing we saw last night. It's a pretty crazy game, obviously, Sunday Night Football. Justin Herbert, I guess, had basically the most amount of passing yards in a game while also having 90-plus rushing yards. It was a crazy performance. And obviously, he's a Dolphins guy, and I think I don't think Tua is as bad as people make him seem. I also don't think Tua's got, like, that same star potential maybe a Burrow or Herbert do. How impressive have you been with Herbert, especially in these big primetime games? He seems like he kind of takes that next leap, as all those really good quarterbacks do.
Listen, he's got a big arm. He's incredibly mobile. He's incredibly talented. Now, let's throw a little disclaimer in there with the Steelers. The Steelers didn't have Minkah Fitzpatrick, T.J. Watt, and Joe Hayden playing defense yesterday. So
it was basically a home game for the Steelers.
Well, it was a home game for the Steelers. The Chargers yucked up a 17-point lead, and that was one of those games. Thank goodness Mike Williams was wide open in coverage, and he scored 50, 60 yards down the field. Herbert's a really good quarterback prospect, but I think listen, he's a better prospect than Tua. I'm not going to debate that. The skill set is just, it's just far greater. You know what I mean? Like, there are things that Herbert can do on the field Tua just cannot. And that's not a knock on Tua. It's just the reality of what Herbert has translated to in the NFL. But let's take that all into account. The hype train around Herbert being the next Mahomes, that's where I think people have gotten a little crazy. I think Herbert is a very good quarterback prospect. At the same time, Will, he's got a lot to prove. Like, I don't know if you feel this way. If you gave me a choice over the next 3 to 5 years, I'm taking Burrow over Herbert. I think he's got more swag.
I might still take Herbert, but I would say, like, the average depth of target for Herbert is concerning. Like, his average depth of target's, like, in the, like, bottom half of the league. And I don't know if that's coaching or not, but for that big enough arm and all these different physical traits, like, I expect you with that amount of talent of the Keenan Allens, they invested heavily in the offensive line. Like, I kind of expect what happened last night, and that's not really happened all year. So I was really impressed with Burrow in person a month ago against the Jets. I know he didn't play great. He moves around the pocket so well, and I feel like
he's got to protect his body. That's the biggest concern I have about him. Even yesterday in that Raider game, he's throwing his body around like a rag doll. Protect the body, and I'm telling you, Burrow has this sort of leadership element that he brings to the table that I think should not get lost on anybody. Like, it's one of those, like, intangible factors that sometimes can be the difference in, like, being the guy in a city, if that makes sense.
No, it makes a ton of sense. I think Burrow's only going to get better. Remember, people forget, like, 12 months ago, he destroyed his knee, like, as bad as you could possibly destroy it. So he's only going to get better going forward. I'll ask you one quick Jets thing, and we'll finish up with one other comment that floated around on Twitter this weekend. What's the expectations maybe from, you know, the Jets have 7 games left, probably 4 or 5 games they could potentially win. They're not beating the Bucs or the Bills. Is 2 or 3 more wins on the schedule kind of achievable, and the Jets get to 4 or 5 wins? They double their win total from last year. Is that kind of what fans should be expecting? Or is the win total, it's just about Zach Wilson and developing?
Yeah, I don't think it's about the win total. Now, yeah, Texans is a winnable game. Philly's a winnable game. You play my team in a couple of weeks. That's probably, it's not at home, so probably a tougher game to win. But you get my drift. They can win 2 more games. It's not about that. How's the quarterback look? Is he growing? Building a chemistry with a guy like Moore? Getting quarterback on the field? The look, Will, you'll know if the team's moving in the right direction. I think the look is far more important than the actual win-loss record. I do. Yeah.
I totally agree. I think it's, you know, you want to see stuff out of Zach Wilson. We'll finish with this, and then next time we have you on, we'll hit more Yankee stuff. But Carlos Correa is a guy that I know he's a really good player, but guys with back issues that, you know, are all rivals, I just, whatever. For whatever reason, I'd rather Corey Seager other than just being a lefty and all these different things. The Jeter comments, obviously the fans get air sensitive to Jeter stuff, and me and you kind of grew up in like the prime Jeter year, so obviously we're fired up. How confused were you about those comments with the Gold Glove stuff? Like when you're the Marlins and the Yankees were two teams bidding for you, and then you're kind of taking shots at Jeter, who owns the Marlins and is a Yankee legend. Were you not confused by that?
My gut feel is that Carlos Correa probably already has a sense of where he's going, and Miami and the Yankees are not those particular places. You know what I mean? Like, I think you kind of know and you kind of have a sense, hey, I'm good here. So if I want to go and take a shot at Derek Jeter, hey, I know it's not going to go and win over the New York fans, who probably don't like me much to begin with anyway. Miami, when it comes to their baseball fans, is not much to choose from anyway to begin with. But I think Correa is going to end up with the Detroit Tigers. He's got the connection with AJ Hinch. They had this big bougie lunch the other day. The Tigers need a leader. The Tigers have the ability to go and spend some money this offseason. And I'm with you. I think Seager is the perfect guy for the Yankees to go get. They need a lefty. He could transition over to third base. Now, truth be told, if they ended up with Carlos Correa, I would take it because I think he's a badass, and I think that team could use a little kick in the ass. So from that standpoint, I wouldn't be opposed, but I prefer Seager. So I'm with you there. Comments aside, which kind of were a little silly, even if you want to get on Jeter's defensive metrics, like the guy's a first-ballot Hall of Famer. He's one of the best to ever do it. Shut up. You know what I mean? And just, I love Jeter's kingly response to that. So
that Jeter response was fantastic. It was such a Jeter response, too. He's, I don't speak that much Spanish. And I was like, oh, wow, this guy's a beast. You know, obviously the Yankees are in a total – we'll see what happens, obviously. The Billy Epler thing with the Mets is interesting. And there's a lot of baseball headlines. But as we mentioned, you know, if you guys do not listen to New York, to subscribe for me, it's every couple of days it comes out. It's awesome. You know, JJ's got great guests, some great rants, the caller voicemails. It's, you'll feel like you're listening to WFAN, but in a more podcast setting where it's relevant, right on the dot. So we always appreciate you coming on, and I know you got some stuff going on tonight as well. Fans can catch you out there as well.
Well, you got it, man. Anytime, bro. Appreciate a couple minutes. Thanks for having me. All right.
All right, of course. Take care.